Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Thursday morning, moving quickly through this week of June, first full week of June. Great to be with you on a Thursday and every day here at EWTN's Catholic Connection, June 4th already. We have a great lineup once again. Of course, it is a Thursday, and that means the one and only Father Mitch Pacwa from EWTN will be with us. There's a lot of stories out there circulating about aliens this morning in connection with the Catholic Church. There is an excellent story on the homepage of EWTNnews.com, and I'll have a snippet of that in the news coming up regarding a decision that was made to let a particular exorcist in an area go by the Cardinal Archbishop. And I'm not second-guessing his decision or saying anything like that, but it brought to mind the topic of life on other planets and aliens. And I think there's a lot of confusion among Christians and particularly Catholics on what does the Church teach on that? What does the Church say about this question of life on other planets? And so I thought with Father Mitch's brilliance that he could weigh in, and he's looking forward to doing that. So I think it's an interesting story, not only this latest story with this Archbishop and this exorcist, but I think overall in terms of what we're seeing with the current administration, looking at this information that they supposedly have about UFOs and now making it available to the public, what are we to think? But most importantly, we have to look at everything through the lens of the scriptures and the teachings of the Catholic Church. And that is what on which we're going to concentrate this morning, to talk about the Church teaching, because there's always more to learn about our faith. And Father Mitch is so full of common sense and great knowledge about the faith, so I thought he'd be the perfect person to go through that with us. And then we're going to be talking about a wonderful opportunity for prayer. We're going to be chatting with Father Peter John Cameron of the Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph, the fourth annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage by the Dominican Friars there. So that will be beautiful. Of course, this is a month of the Sacred Heart, and last month was a month of Mary. And what a beautiful combination, the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary, bringing those two together in this beautiful rosary pilgrimage. Second hour of Catholic Connection on EWTN's Radio Extra. 2 cents, I'm going to talk about how do you know when you're going in the right direction in terms of following God's will. Scripture has a lot to do with that. I'll share a very recent experience, a fresh experience. How do you know you're making the right decision? How do you know it's the right call? Scripture is a great guide. At least it is for me, and it can be for all of us if we are in the readings in Scripture every single day, and of course, understanding that Scripture from a Catholic perspective. I'll explain in 2 cents. And then really looking forward to having Carrie Gress back on with us. We're going to be talking about her wonderful ministry, Theology of the Home, but more specifically, how do we celebrate America's 250th with our families, and more particularly our children, our grandchildren? How can we bring this message in the home? What kind of activities, to whom do we look in terms of not only people in the church, but maybe past and present leaders of our country? Carrie has some great ideas, and she joins us for 2 segments in hour number 2 here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. Let's take a look at the forecast now at 3 minutes past the hour. Severe storms continuing to be possible over parts of the Northern Plains and Upper Midwest, and that will be with us through the weekend, through Saturday. And they say it still could bring even more large hail, damaging winds, and some tornadoes along with it. And then they're talking about heavy to excessive rainfall producing flooding over a part of the Midwest today. Elevated to critical fire weather expected also into the weekend over parts of the Central Rockies and the Great Basin. That is a look at your forecast and our rundown for today on a Thursday. Again, we appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. Let's get started with the news now. It is 4 minutes past the hour on EWTN's Catholic Connection. Pope Leo's upcoming apostolic journey to Spain set to begin this weekend on June 6th on Saturday, marking his fourth international trip, which will see the Holy Father travel some 1,500 miles, stopping in Madrid, Barcelona, as well as the Canary Islands. An estimated 500,000 faithful, according to Vatican News, are expected to attend the various events. And many themes, from disarmament to peace, from the role of the Church to the challenge of facing Spain and Europe, from the defense of life to migration. The press secretary at the Vatican Holy See press office, Matteo Bruni, saying, "Needless to say, expectations are high." The comments coming as he's presented the program and details of the Pope's pilgrimage to a land, he said, of ancient Christian tradition. Aland, the Vatican spokesman, added that served as a laboratory of dialogue between different worlds in the heart of the Middle Ages, a land of great thinkers and Christian culture, the school of Salamanca, where in the 16th century, scholastic theology and international law met, helping to shape reflection on the rights and dignity of every human being. Of course, it is also known, he said, as a land of the great saints, such as St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila. Washington's Archbishop Cardinal Robert McElroy on June 3rd removing a prominent priest, from his role as an archdiocesan exorcist after that priest made remarks linking UFOs to demonic activity. EWTNNews.com reporting that Monsignor Stephen Rossetti was removed as an exorcist of the Archdiocese of Washington, the Cardinal said in a statement posted to their website. Rossetti is a priest in the Diocese of Syracuse, and the statement noted in addition to Rossetti's removal, the Cardinal saying the Archdiocese had ended all affiliation between the Archdiocese and St. Michael's Center for Spiritual Renewal, located in Washington, D.C. Led by Rossetti, the St. Michael's Center is a Catholic nonprofit that conducts spiritual educational workshops and trains clergy, religious, and laity, according to its website. EWTN News saying that on May 29th, Rossetti had posted a video on YouTube in which the exorcist had expressed his personal beliefs that many, if not most, UFO sightings are in fact demons. He said such entities can do things that we can't, such as spread all sorts of things that human beings can't do. In other news this morning, Sarah Lee Kessler tells us the New York Police Department says it's arrested an NYU student in connection with an anti-Semitic incident during graduation week.
Police say surveillance video shows Alexander Stepnowski, a Fairfield, Connecticut resident, hoisting an Israeli flag bearing an NYU logo and two swastikas over a campus building May 13th. The 23-year-old, who was a fourth-year student at NYU, allegedly admitted using his school ID card to gain access to the roof, telling police he did it because of the university's pro-Israel policies. Stepnowski has been charged with criminal trespass, aggravated harassment, and burglary. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
Organizers in Colorado are bringing... of a deadly firebomber during a protest at the Pearl Street Mall. One person died and a dozen more were hurt, leading to the life sentence for the man who carried out the attack. Organizers are coordinating with local police, the FBI, and other federal agencies to ensure the festival is safe. The festival will be held on the mall's courthouse lawn this Sunday. The House passing a measure limiting President Trump's Iran war powers, or at least aimed to do just that. The resolution passing 215-208 with four Republicans voting yes alongside the Democrats. The measure directs the president to remove the forces from conflict with Iran unless Congress votes to declare war or authorizes military force. And the U.S. and Iran are continuing to exchange missile fire over the Persian Gulf. Richard Engel reports the U.S. has been attacking Iran while Iran has fired missiles at Kuwait and Bahrain.
Kuwait's airport this morning was forced into an emergency shutdown as it was targeted by Iranian drones and missiles, killing one person and causing significant damage to a terminal, according to the foreign ministry. A Kuwaiti official called it an act of criminal Iranian aggression.
Reports out of the region say Iran began firing missiles at U.S. allies after the U.S. attacked an oil tanker bound for an Iranian port that did not comply with the U.S. blockade. The U.S. also reportedly striking an Iranian military ground control station this near the Strait of Hormuz. And a man from Newport Beach is facing a federal charge on suspicion of supplying U.S. equipment to Iran's government.
Jamshid Ghomi, the CEO of an Iran-based technology company, was arrested today on a federal criminal complaint charging him with violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. Ghomi, a dual U.S.-Iranian national, is charged with conspiracy to violate the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Prosecutors say he acquired sophisticated U.S.-origin networking security and encryption equipment for Iranian customers, including the Iranian regime's nuclear and military divisions. Ghomi is due in court in Santa Ana this afternoon. I'm Daniel Martindale.
The U.S. Army identifying an American soldier who was killed over the weekend in Iraq. A statement released yesterday says 26-year-old Sergeant David Seibel of Robinson, Texas, was killed in northern Iraq over the weekend in what the Pentagon says was a training-related incident at the Erbil Air Base. He was training for Operation Inherent Resolve, the U.S. operation against ISIS, No details are given about the incident, which also killed a 29-year-old soldier for the British Army. And the U.S. military has struck another alleged drug boat, this time in the Eastern Pacific. The U.S. Southern Command saying yesterday that two people were killed in the attack, and it claims their intelligence confirmed the vessel was engaged in narco-trafficking operations. Over 200 people have been killed in military strikes against suspected drug boats during the Trump administration so far. President Trump says he will nominate Acting Attorney General Todd Blanch to serve in the role permanently.
He's Acting Attorney General. Tomorrow I'm instructing Dan and everybody else that's involved in that very complicated process, which is going to go, I think, very quickly, that we are going to make him permanent Attorney General.
Trump announcing the decision during a private White House event last night. In a video posted by White House Deputy Chief of Staff Dan Scavino, the president speaks in the Rose Garden and confirms Blanch's upcoming nomination, saying he is instructing Scavino today to make things permanent. Blanch taking over as acting attorney general in early April as Trump let Attorney General Pam Bondi go. The U.S. Senate confirming the president's pick for a new federal judge. Meanwhile, in Montana, senators voting yesterday to confirm Katie Lane for the U.S. District Court for the District of Montana, the Trump appointee previously serving as a senior counsel for litigation for the Republican National Committee. She served as a deputy solicitor general for the Montana AG, Austin Knudsen, from 2021 to 23. She will replace outgoing Judge Susan Waters, who was appointed by the former President Obama back in 2013, to become the first woman to serve as a federal judge in the state of Montana. And Mark Mayfield tells us the president is ending civil service protections for some 8,000 high-ranking federal employees.
An executive order signed Wednesday makes the staffers at-will employees, meaning they can be fired for any reason. They include senior policy directors, advisors, and several with significant involvement in regulations and deciding who gets federal grants. Critics of the move argue it erodes the barriers protecting federal civil servants from political pressure. Office of Personnel Management Director Scott Cooper had a different take, calling it a restoration of the democratic process that promotes accountability. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Ohio State University will pay $100 million to about 280 former students who claim they were sexually abused by a campus doctor, the settlement ending a legal battle over accusations of sexual abuse by Richard Strauss, who allegedly assaulted hundreds of student athletes while giving them physical exams between 1978 and 1998. OSU had previously settled for about $60 million with over 300 students. And Uber is slashing jobs, a rideshare company announcing it's cutting nearly a quarter of its recruitment and human resources staff. This comes as Uber looks to streamline operations as the new president takes over. In a memo, the new president saying the goal with the layoffs is to create a more connected, a more modern, operational, excellent organization. A company spokesperson says the cuts represent less than 1% of its 34,000 employees. It is a Thursday morning. It is June 4th, 2026. Great to be with you Monday through Friday here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. The one, the only, Father Mitch Pacwa is coming up next for two segments on Cultural Connection. And then we'll take a look at a beautiful pilgrimage in which you may take part, and I hope you do. It is the fourth annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage by the Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph, and Peter John Cameron with the Friars will be joining us after Father Mitch for two segments. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Beautiful Thursday morning. I know I always appreciate tapping into the incredible brain and the heart of Father Mitch Pacwa. He's so full of knowledge and love of the faith, and it's so helpful to have him address different issues that are out there. We see them in the news, we see the headlines, and we scratch our head and say, okay, well, what does that mean? And what does the church say about it? That's why I thought it would be great to have Father Mitch explain what the church teaching is regarding alien life, when we're talking about life on other planets, and the stories in the news regarding a decision made by the Bishop, Archbishop of Washington, D.C., and his exorcist in relationship, apparently, to a video this particular exorcist did. So that's a decision, but what I want to do, and that's between the exorcist and the Archbishop, and he had his reasons, I'm sure. We're not going to look at that, but I think it does beg the question, Father, because in addition to this story, which is all over the secular media this morning, getting a lot of traction, I think it's important for us to understand what the church says, because we see this a lot. We have this committee or this group with this administration, the current administration, that has opened up apparently the UFO files. So what does the church say about this? I think a lot of us have questions about that. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. You heard it here first. Pacwa is an agnostic.
Huh?
He's an agnostic about outer space people. And
okay,
I mean that in the best possible way. I don't know about people from outer space. The president, said that, he's not convinced based on the evidence he has seen. And I guarantee you this, he has seen more evidence than I have. But here's the there are some issues about that. I mean, first, you have a number of people who, for years, Carl Sagan and other people who say this. Look at this huge universe. We can't possibly be the only people here. There must be other people somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And statistically, there's so many planets that could support life. Statistically, there are planets that can support life in other solar systems, say within our own Milky Way galaxy, as well as in the other galaxies. But we don't know. And we have to consider that with lots of the stars that we see at night, we're talking about places that are so far away that we see their past. In other words, so many stars have already ceased to exist, but we still see the light, and we just don't know nearly enough. And the key to doing science is A, propose a theory based on observable phenomena. You can see these planets, another places. You can get evidence. Today, we can get evidence of planets in other solar systems and in other galaxies. There's evidence that such exists. And there's even some evidence that perhaps some of these planets could support life. That's possible. But that's theory. It doesn't mean that they do, because life is very complex. For instance, even on Earth, you have to have water. You also have to have a molten center on our planet for life to exist, with the continents floating on that molten center slowly, but they're floating around. If that weren't the case, you couldn't have life. And so many other factors. And we don't know the other factors. So we can propose a theory that possibly there are, or statistically, there's a possibility of these other planets existing, and some of them may be able to support life. And even then, that doesn't mean that there's life. So what do you do then when you have a theory based on these possibilities? You look for concrete evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just build up mathematical statistical analyses of what could be. Statistically, I could be president of the United States. Not only is it not going to happen, I don't want it to happen. There's so many factors. You have to look at reality. That is key. finding what is really there. Secondly, it's very important. If we do have evidence of life on other planets, and these people exist, some people have thought, and even in the early centuries of the church, there were people who thought that, well, this can't be because they can't be the children of Adam. Well, they would not be the children of Adam. All of Homo sapiens has descended from a pair of humans. And that's not just because the Bible says that. They can trace our DNA to a change in one individual woman. They can trace down the mitochondrial DNA of the female side of our species more easily than the male. So we can say for sure there's a change in the DNA that happened in one individual woman, and obviously with her mate, and the Homo sapiens comes from that particular change. All right, fine. And if there are people from outer space, we presume they are not at all connected with Homo sapiens. So we have to find out, who are they? What are they like? For instance, one possibility in terms of the issues of faith would be, A, have they fallen into sin? I recommend, in terms of thinking about such things, the series of novels by C.S. Lewis, his Space Trilogy. And he has one of them, the first one, where there are creatures living on another planet, and they did not commit original sin. Mm-hmm. And so they're virtuous. And he gives what would that look like? He makes that kind of proposal. But we would have to find out, are these other people sinners or not? That would be a question. And then he also has, in the second novel, what it would be like in a hypothetical for the temptation of a creature from another planet to fall into their original sin. Would the devil try to get them to fall? So theologically, we would have to deal with questions. Did the evil one try to tempt them? Are they fallen, or are they in a state of original justice? We don't know. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to find out. And what that would mean in terms of the redemption by Jesus Christ. And you don't say, well, it can't be because of... No, find out what is. Look at the actual facts. And right now, we don't have actual facts, at least none that are available to the public, except, a variety of videos of fast-moving objects that make right turns at an incredible speed. Mm-hmm. We can say that. To say what it is and what that would be like, we have to find out. And let me just add one other thing.
Hold that thought because we're coming up to a break, so let's come back to that. And also we have a great summary on Catholic Answers, which basically is reiterating everything you said. I'll read some of it. Then I have a question about what some in the spiritual world are saying in terms of those who deal with spiritual matters about demons and aliens. We'll talk about that next. What does our church teach us about the possibility of life on other planets? Exploring that question during our Cultural Connections segments with Father Mitch Pacwa this morning from EWTN. Because we like to always give you the truth from a Catholic perspective, because that's the only truth, the fullness of the truth. But also, we like you to have a deeper understanding of our faith, especially when you see so many stories talking about something that happened in the Catholic Church or related to the Catholic Church and this topic of aliens or creatures, quote-unquote, from outer space. So, Father, The problem, apparently, according to the statement from the Archdiocese of Washington, was that this particular exorcist was claiming that demons are really the aliens, or the aliens are if people see them or have experiences, they're actually having experience with evil spirits. So that has been around for a while. We were chatting about this during the break, hasn't it?
Exactly. I heard about it first from an evangelical, a Baptist friend of mine named Walter Martin. He was somebody I actually debated about Catholicism and Protestantism back in 78 and 79. You can see those old debates between Walter and me. And we had a good time doing it and became good friends after that. But, Walter was a big proponent, following a number of other people, that these that the flight patterns that are videotaped by reputable people, pilots in the Air Force and civil air, physically impossible turns. That's one of the main things, that when you have a certain speed, and they recorded it on the high Mach level, and then they would make a sharp right turn, a 90-degree turn. You can't do that with any aircraft we have. Not only would the aircraft fall apart if it tried that, but so would all the people inside die if it were a human being. And so that was the basis for that speculation. And again, people do this all over, especially in the news media. Well, this mm-hmm. can't be because of this, therefore it must be this. In other words, they say, since you cannot make a 90-degree turn with anything that we have, then this phenomenon must be such and so that fits what is in my theory. That's where I take my agnosticism. I don't know. That's what agnostic means. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I like to point out, for all those people who have relatives that are claiming to be agnostics or themselves claim to be agnostics, that's just a nice Greek word for saying that you're ignorant. Ignorant is the Latin form of it, and agnostic is a fancier Greek form, but it just means you mm-hmm. don't know what you're talking about. I profess my agnosticism when it comes to outer space aliens.
Now, what does it content. Say? Because this is a question people always have, and this came up, I told you. CatholicAnswers.com, by the way, has a great summary, basically reiterating everything you said, Father.
And I didn't even see their article. I agree with it.
I mean, great minds think alike. So, but they're saying in the last paragraph, to insist there must be intelligent life elsewhere in the universe is to overstate the case.
Yep.
It's also theologically irrelevant because the central tenets of Christianity remain intact with or without the little green men. So, basically, they're saying, why should we be worried about it? Because, I mean, this is just my opinion. God is God. He can create and do whatever he wants.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that that doesn't make Christianity false. And if he created another world where he's trying to help people differently or different types of people, then what is that to us? I mean, we have to look at what's happening here on Earth.
Well, use this as a model. I know he's much maligned and all this, but think about Columbus. He took the what was the accepted knowledge of the time, that the Earth was round, and therefore, if you sail west, you'll get to India. And he was right. What he didn't know is that there was this huge two continents in between that blocked the way. And mm-hmm. So he had a theory. It was correct, but he didn't know about what was in between. And that's why we still called, less so today, but we called the people living in the Americas Indians, because they thought they landed in India, and they had not. And so this was something, you have a theory, you try to prove it, and you discover something completely different, the Americas in that case. So also, I know my friends on the left, the worst thing that ever happened to the Western world, But the reality is, you know, they discovered something else while they're pursuing one theory, and you have to learn to deal. They tried to fit what they found in the Americas to their theory that they hit India, but they had not. Here's something else that's very important with that. We discovered the Native Americans of all different kinds of different peoples, wide variety, huge variety of peoples, as diverse as anything in the old world. And it's one of the things we have to learn from that. They were of a different level of civilization than we. They were still basically Chalcolithic or Stone Age people. They didn't know how to make metals, and they did not have weapons that could stand up to the European metallurgy and other weapons we had. And as a result, Europeans were able to conquer them, and in many, so way too many cases, oppress them. That's the reality of original sin showing itself up in that reality. Here's what we need to hope for. If there are these other people, we better hope that, A, they are better people than we are. And that they, if they have rational souls with free will, then we better hope they are better than we are. And secondly, that they are more powerful and better. If they are not as powerful as we, we'll do to them what we did to the Native Americans, to Africans, and other people who had no metallurgy and did not have the technology to defend themselves against European weapons. That would be the case. If they can't defend themselves against Earthling weapons, they could be endangered by us. And we better hope that not only are they more powerful, but they are better, because if they are more powerful and they are evil people, they'll do to us what we did to the Native Americans. That's the story of The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. People from Mars, because they didn't know Mars was not inhabited, but people from Mars came here and tried to destroy the Earth. We see that in a number of other apocalyptic outer space movies where space invaders come here. Independence Day is a good example of that. That's one scenario, that they're stronger than we and worse than we. That's dangerous.
Father, can you stay? I have one more question I think
sure
is important.
Can
you stay
for
with
you?
Okay, good. Yes, thank you, my dear. We'll be right back. More with Father Mitch Fakwa on a Thursday morning. It's Cultural Connections with Father Mitch. For tuning in to Catholic Connection on a Thursday. It is June 4th, 2026. One, the only, Father Mitch Fakwa, hanging around for a little bit, and we will catch up with our guest who was scheduled for this morning a little bit later on, because I want to continue this conversation, because it is all over the news. I mean, Father, it's everywhere. It's on all, you know, all the social media posts. It's in secular media. MSN has it. Fox News has it. But you know what it is? It's the UFOs. It's the media picking up, UFOs in the Catholic Church. I mean, it's the makings of a perfect tabloid story that'll spread all over the place. That's the media doing this. But people see this, and it involves the church, that this is a decision that was made. And so we want to talk about it in terms of, what does the church say about this? What does the church say about life on other planets? Now, they do attack Christianity and those who believe in life on other planets. They see, you people aren't so special. There really isn't a God, because what's going on here?
Yeah.
How do we respond to these stories? How do we respond from a Catholic Christian perspective?
Yeah, here's one of the things. You see, again, I mentioned Carl Sagan, whom I respect quite a bit for being able to talk about, you know, some elements of astrophysics and physics. That's his expertise, not mine. Though, if you really want to learn more about astrophysics, I strongly urge that you look up, a friend of mine has been on my show a number of times, Dr. Anthony Rizzi. He and his team together won the Nobel Prize in Physics for original research. But Dr. Rizzi is also a very solid physicist and a solid Catholic who shows how we have to stop thinking in lines of this, what he calls scientism, that begins with this theoretical world based on just playing with numbers and analyzing, you know, statistics, things like that, instead of looking at the physical world. Go to his institute. You can find Dr. Anthony Rizzi online and his institute to learn a lot better physics than you'll get from Sagan and Tyson, though they give good information. But they are trying to undercut the idea in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, that humanity is made in the image and likeness of God. And they want to say that there are all these other planets that are inhabited as a way to undercut the world being created for man and man for the world. They want, they'll typically say, well, the Earth is just a small little planet, but around a mediocre sun that is about two-thirds of the way out from the Milky Way. We're not the center of things, and so on. And, you know, this is a pseudo-humility. I'm in favor, you know, humility is a virtue we should all accomplish, but they use humbling the creation and human beings as a way to denigrate that we exist because God created us. Now, is it possible, again, as we've said, that there are that there are rational creatures living on other planets? Yes, that is possible. You know, but it's also a possibility that God created us to go and find these other inhabitable worlds and inhabit them. I don't know. I don't know that that's what we're called to do or not. Jesus told us to go and preach the gospel to the ends of the earth, not the ends of the universe.
Well, that'd be kind of fun, though, if we can get into a spaceship and do that, if we do find other people.
Maybe it would be fun, maybe not. I think it would be boring living. You'd have to spend, you'd have to start your own little society and give birth and things like that in outer space to reach some of these places.
That's true.
Because remember, some of these are 3 and 4 and 5 and hundreds and thousands of light years. Do you know what a light year is? It's not a year. It's the distance that light can travel in a year, going at, 186,000 miles per second? That's an enormous distance, and we cannot travel at the speed of light. We can't do that. You know, they can make light flashes in outer space movies because they're using light and fake images. But we, right now, we have no capacity to travel at the speed of light. So we're not going to do that. Now, I don't know that wormholes exist in space like they do in some of these outer space movies to get you from one place to another.
Here's a question for you. Here's another question. Do you, and because you're very knowledgeable, you talk to a lot of people, you're extremely well-read, not just in church teaching and all matters of church, but is there an emphasis not only among some Catholic exorcists or people involved in spiritual direction, or, for example, in the evangelical world, you said those who believe that demons present themselves sometimes as demons, that's, as you said, came from the Protestant world a while ago in the 70s and the 80s.
Right.
Do you see this as something that is happening more and more in the Catholic world, that those who are involved in this type of ministry are buying into that? Then if that's the case, then should we be cautious of, for example, and maybe I'm overly dramatic, but all the different types of movies that are out there involving life and, you know, and other planets.
Yeah, a couple things. Before I accuse certain phenomena, which are phenomena of flashes of light that have been videotaped by various military and civil pilots and stuff. Before I accuse those flashes of light of being demons going across, I want to see if they do something demonic. Are these demonic phenomena? Well, they have to show themselves to be evil before I can say that they are demonic. I can't just say, well, I can't explain them, therefore they must be demonic. I don't know that. See, this is why I keep going back to my agnosticism. No, I don't know if they have done anything demonic. And there is nothing inherently demonic about speculating whether people can rational creatures with free will that have an eternal soul, therefore, whether they can exist on other planets. There's nothing inherently evil about them, nothing inherently good. I wish people would watch Independence Day again, that movie. It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And one of the things in there, you have all these goofy people out in California welcoming with signs the space people, and then they get blown up. You don't know if they're good, and you don't know if they're evil until they show up, you can observe them, and then you see, do they do something that is good, do they do something that is evil, or are they just stupid? We don't know any of those things about them. And you have to deal with the actual phenomena of what they plan to do and not live in a world of a theoretical, it could be anything. What is the evidence? That's where science comes in, looking at the concrete evidence before you theorize.
Wow.
And that applies to theorizing whether they're evil spirits or anything. I have no idea. None. I don't think I just don't have an opinion on it because I don't know facts, only theory. And that's not a healthy thing to do.
Okay, here's my take on this. And I love the way you're presenting this because it makes so much sense. But my own, in terms of my own coming in back into the church and reading the church teachings, I have always found that if the church is saying we don't have a teaching on this, there's not enough evidence or whatever, then I'm like, okay, the church is saying this, so I can leave this alone. I can put that aside. This is not something that I have to worry about in order for my own salvation. You know what I'm saying? Because the church is very clear about this. We don't have a teaching on it. You know, there's
right.
So, okay.
And we don't have a teaching on it because we don't have evidence.
Right.
And so, you know, let's use this as a model to understand. The apostles did not know if Jesus Christ had really risen from the tomb until they saw him. Then it became a dogma that you cannot be a Christian unless you believe that Jesus is raised from the dead. This becomes necessary. Mm-hmm. But they had the evidence. They saw him. They touched him.
Right.
They spoke with him. They listened to him. And they watched him ascend into heaven after that. So, and they gave their lives. They had this evidence that was so convincing to them that they preferred execution rather than deny it. This has to be a model for us in regard to people from outer space, that we have to have a sense of saying, is there evidence? Do these people exist? What are they like in reality? Not what they must be like. They must be fallen and still in sin. Did Jesus? We don't know. Find out the facts the way the apostles found out the facts. about Jesus Christ and his resurrection. And until we have the facts, let's not, again, you can propose a theory, but you propose a theory not to say, well, this is my opinion and just discuss. No, propose a theory, find out what's true and what fits reality, and then engage. And if there were people from outer space, I would like, I would hope that I would like to meet with them. Again, I would hope that they are not wicked creatures. I would hope that they are good. And I have to be open to either possibility. I'm not just curious for curiosity's sake, just like I am not curious about the mental state of a rattlesnake. I don't care. I just want to avoid something dangerous. But if it is something that is, interesting and benign and mutually able to love us back and does love us, let's find out. But that's all speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with the fact.
Right. And not that we can't wonder about this and think, gosh, wouldn't that be interesting? But at the end of the day, if the church is telling us that they don't have the evidence, and I think, again, this is just my personal opinion, we move on and we do the tasks at hand that the Lord has placed before us, right?
Uh-huh. That's one of the things. It is so easy
mm-hmm.
to allow theories about what could be and might be, and what we used to call back in the 1960s, blue sky thinking, or skyhook thinking. You just think that there's a hook in the sky that's going to come down and pull this out of a hat or something. No. I have plenty of work to do. Sinners coming out my ears.
We love you, Father. Thanks for hanging with us. A great discussion. I think a really important one, and helps people just realize on which we must concentrate. On Jesus, and of course, preaching to the four corners of this planet. We'll be right back. Again, because if you haven't seen any of the news articles, it's all over the place, and I just thought it would be an opportunity to teach, obviously, what the church says and doesn't say about these things. Very important to understand that. I think Father Mitch did a great job. Also, a great little summary on CatholicAnswers.com, too. Catholic.com, if you're interested. Okay, coming up in hour number two, we are working on getting Father Peter John Cameron on to talk about the Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage. He may be able to join us in the second hour. We're not sure yet. We're still working. There's a phone issue. If not, though, we do have a terrific two segments that are scheduled with Carrie Gress. And, of course, she is amazing. She's an author. She's a speaker. She is a theologian. And she has a beautiful ministry called Theology of the Home. And in this particular topic, she is diving into what we can do in the home with our families in relationship to America's upcoming 250th anniversary. So I look forward to talking with Carrie, and that will be for two segments. Carrie Gress will be joining us at 28 minutes past the hour in hour number two of EWTN Radio Extra, and then also at 39 minutes past the hour. So I think it'll be a really uplifting conversation, maybe give us some creative ideas on how we can share this with our neighbors, with our families, especially our kids and our grandkids. This is such a unique opportunity that we have with this upcoming anniversary. If you think about the beautiful history of our country and the connection to so many Catholics who helped build this country in so many ways. Should be a great discussion in hour number two. Hope you can join us. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's a Thursday morning. Great to be with you. Our number two of Catholic Connection here on EWTN's Radio Extra. And we found him. We found Father. Yay.
having problems with the phone before, but he's going to join us with a beautiful, beautiful reminder of the 4th Annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage by the Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph. We had some phone issues with him in the first hour, but it all worked out. You know, it's live radio. You got to go with the flow. And again, as I mentioned earlier, when you have a brain like Father Mitch's, an hour could never tap into it all. So I was glad he was with us to talk about the topic of life on other planets and what the church teaches. So this morning, as I mentioned, in the first segment, we'll be talking with Father Peter John regarding this beautiful Dominican Rosary pilgrimage and how you may get involved. And then after that, the amazing Carrie Gress is with us. She's going to be talking about celebrating America's 250th from a truly Catholic American perspective and how to do this with your kids and family at home. So this will be great. So two segments with Carrie and one with Father Peter John Cameron about the 4th Annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage, which, by the way, from what I understand, is very, very popular and doing really well. And you know what? That's what happens when Mama Mary is involved. I'm just saying. Okay. Weather-wise, let's see what's happening. We have severe thunderstorms that will continue to be possible over parts of the northern plains and upper Midwest. That is through this weekend on Saturday, more specifically. Could bring large hail, damaging winds, and possible tornadoes. Heavy to excessive rainfall could be producing flooding over a part of the Midwest. That'll happen today. And then elevated to critical fire weather expected today into this weekend over parts of the Central Rockies and the Great Basin. It is a Thursday morning. We so appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. Right now, though, let's get started with the news at 2 minutes past the hour, more specifically on EWTN's Radio Extra. A big travel week coming up for the Holy Father, Pope Leo's upcoming apostolic journey to Spain. It begins on Saturday, June 6th and runs through the 12th. It's marking his fourth international trip, which will see the Holy Father, as Vatican News tells us, travel some 1,500 miles, stopping in Madrid, Barcelona, and the Canary Islands. An estimated 500,000 faithful are expected to attend the various events, and many themes from disarmament to peace, from the role of the church to the challenges facing Spain and Europe, from the defense of life to migration will be discussed. Matteo Bruni, director of the Holy See Press Office, saying, "Needless to say, our expectations are high." His comments are made as he presented yesterday the program and the details of the Holy Father's pilgrimage to a land he called a land of ancient Christian tradition, a land the Vatican spokesman also said has served as a laboratory of dialogue between different worlds in the heart of the Middle Ages. He said it's also the land of the great saints, such as St. John of the Cross, of course, and St. Teresa of Avila, whose thought resonates prophetically with the challenges of our own times. Washington's Archbishop Cardinal Robert McElroy on June 3rd removing a prominent priest from his role as an archdiocesan exorcist after the priest made remarks linking UFOs to demonic activity. Monsignor Stephen Rossetti was removed as an exorcist of the archdiocese, the cardinal said in a statement posted to the website of the archdiocese. Rossetti is a priest in the Diocese of Syracuse, New York. The statement noted in addition to Rossetti's removal, the cardinal said the archdiocese has ended all affiliation between the Archdiocese and the St. Michael Center for Spiritual Renewal, located in the nation's capital. Led by Rossetti, the St. Michael Center is a Catholic nonprofit that conducts spiritual education workshops and trains clergy, religious, and laity, according to its website. In other news this morning, the New York Police Department, as Sarah Lee Kessler tells us, arrested a New York University student in connection with an anti-Semitic incident during graduation week.
Police say surveillance video shows Alexander Stepnowski, a Fairfield, Connecticut resident, hoisting an Israeli flag bearing an NYU logo and two swastikas over a campus building May 13th. The 23-year-old, who was a fourth-year student at NYU, allegedly admitted using his school ID card to gain access to the roof, telling police he did it because of the university's pro-Israel policies. Stepnowski has been charged with criminal trespass, aggravated harassment, and burglary. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
Organizers in Colorado are bringing in more security for this weekend's Boulder Jewish Festival. The festival will happen just days after the first anniversary of a deadly firebombing during a protest at the Pearl Street Mall. One person died and a dozen more were hurt, leading to a life sentence for the man who carried out the attack.
Organizers are coordinating with local police, the FBI, and other federal agencies to ensure the festival is safe. The festival will be held on the mall's courthouse lawn this Sunday. The House passing a measure aimed at limiting President Trump's Iran war powers. The resolution passed 215 to 208, with four Republicans voting yes alongside all Democrats. The measure directed the president to remove forces from conflict with Iran unless Congress is voting to declare war or authorize military force. The U.S. and Iran, meanwhile, are continuing to exchange missile fire over the Persian Gulf. NBC's Richard Engel tells us the U.S. has been attacking Iran while Iran has been firing missiles at Kuwait and Bahrain.
Kuwait's airport this morning was forced into an emergency shutdown as it was targeted by Iranian drones and missiles, killing one person and causing significant damage to a terminal, according to the foreign ministry. A Kuwaiti official called it an act of criminal Iranian aggression.
Reports out of the region say Iran began firing missiles at U.S. allies after the U.S. attacked an oil tanker bound for an Iranian port that did not comply with the U.S. blockade. The U.S. also reportedly struck an Iranian military ground control station near the Strait of Hormuz. Daniel Martindale tells us a man from Newport Beach is facing a federal charge on suspicion of supplying U.S. equipment to Iran's government.
Jamshid Ghomi, the CEO of an Iran-based technology company, was arrested today on a federal criminal complaint charging him with violating U.S. sanctions against Iran. Ghomi, a dual U.S.-Iranian national, is charged with conspiracy to violate the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. Prosecutors say he acquired sophisticated U.S.-origin networking security and encryption equipment for Iranian customers, including the Iranian regime's nuclear and military divisions. Ghomi is due in court in Santa Ana this afternoon. I'm Daniel Martindale.
The U.S. Army identifying the American soldier who was killed over the weekend in Iraq. A statement released Wednesday says 26-year-old Sergeant Devin Seibel of Robinson, Texas, was killed in northern Iraq on Sunday in what the Pentagon says was a training-related incident at the Erbil Air Base. Seibel was training for Operation Inherent Resolve, the U.S. operation against ISIS. No details were given about the incident, which also killed a 29-year-old soldier from the British Army. The U.S. military has struck another alleged drug boat in the Eastern Pacific. The U.S. Southern Command saying Wednesday that two people were killed in the attack and claims their intelligence confirmed that the vessel was engaged in narco-trafficking operations. President Trump says he will nominate Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche to serve in the role permanently.
He's Acting Attorney General. Tomorrow I'm instructing Dan and everybody else that's involved in that very complicated process, which is going to go, I think, very quickly, that we are going to make him permanent Attorney General.
Trump announcing the decision during a private White House event last night. In a video posted by White House Deputy Chief of Staff Dan Scavino, the president speaks in the Rose Garden, confirming Blanche's upcoming nomination, saying he is instructing Scavino today to make things permanent. Blanche taking over as acting attorney general in early April after Trump fired Attorney General Pam Bondi. And the U.S. Senate is confirming the president's pick for a new federal judge in Montana. Senators voting yesterday to confirm Katie Lane for the U.S. District Court for the District of Montana, the Trump appointee previously serving as senior counsel for litigation for the Republican National Committee, and she served as Deputy Solicitor General for Montana's AG Attorney, Attorney General Austin Knudsen from 2021 to 2023. Lane, replacing outgoing Judge Susan Waters, was appointed by former President Obama back in 2013 to become the first woman to serve as a federal judge in the state of Montana. Mark Mayfield tells us President Trump is ending civil service protections for some 8,000 high-ranking federal employees.
An executive order signed Wednesday makes the staffers at-will employees, meaning they can be fired for any reason. They include senior policy directors, advisors, and several with significant involvement in regulations and deciding who gets federal grants. Critics of the move argue it erodes the barriers protecting federal civil servants from political pressure. Office of Personnel Management Director Scott Cooper had a different take, calling it a restoration of the democratic process that promotes accountability. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Ohio State University will pay $100 million to about 280 former students who claimed they were abused by a campus doctor sexually. The settlement ends a legal battle over accusations of sex abuse by Dr. Richard Strauss, who allegedly abused hundreds of student-athletes while giving them physicals between 1978 and 1998. Ohio State had previously settled for about $60 million with over 300 students. And the jury is seated in a Texas murder trial, a trial that's garnered national attention. Carmelo Anthony, or Carmelo Anthony, is charged in the April 2025 stabbing death of Austin Metcalf at a track meet in Frisco. Prosecutors say he's now 19, but back then he killed the 17-year-old Metcalf with a pocket knife over an argument about seating arrangements. Anthony's attorneys say it was self-defense. Dominique Alexander, president of the civil rights group The Next Generation Action Network, expressed outrage that no black jurors were selected. Metcalf was white. Anthony is black. Jason Campagnolo says one of the candidates for governor in California is urging voters to make sure their ballots have been counted.
Billionaire Tom Steyer's campaign sent out a letter thanking his supporters. In the letter, the Democrat says that the most important thing his supporters can do while they wait for the election numbers to be updated is to make sure that their ballots have been accepted. Steyer is currently running in third place, but holding on to hope that he'll make the runoff in November, telling supporters that there's still a lot that remains to be seen. To check your ballot, you can go to the Secretary of State's website. I'm Jason Campagnolo.
An investigation is underway to find out who's responsible for bomb threats made to schools across the state of Vermont. The schools were searched, but nothing was found, and officials believe the threats were hoaxes known as swatting calls. The FBI, meanwhile, is involved with that investigation. Tammy Trujillo explains a World Cup is about to come to Los Angeles, and so are the scammers.
The LA County Sheriff's Department's out with a warning about cyber criminals creating fake FIFA websites and social media ads that look a lot like legitimate ticketing and checkout pages. Those sites, though, are trying to steal login credentials, personal information, and credit card numbers. The department says to make sure you're actually buying World Cup tickets or souvenirs, you should go directly to the official FIFA website by typing FIFA.com in your browser and not get there through any links you find in ads, social media posts, emails, or text messages. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Uber is slashing jobs, the rideshare company announcing it's cutting nearly a quarter of its recruitment and human resource staff. This as Uber looks to streamline operations as new president Jill Hazelbaker takes over. In a memo, she said the goal with the layoffs is to create a more connected, modern, operationally excellent organization. A company spokesperson says the cuts represent less than 1% of their 34,000 employees. And Matt Madison tells us as we wrap up the news on a Thursday morning, private sector hiring growing more than expected in the month of May, adding about 122,000 workers.
Payroll processor ADP reports that the numbers were up from 105,000 in April and better than market predictions of 110,000. The numbers were the strongest since January of last year. Education and health services saw the most growth with 57,000 new hires, followed by trade, transportation, and utilities. When it comes to salary, people staying at their current jobs saw average pay increases for the year of nearly 4.5%. Hiring levels will be closely monitored by the Federal Reserve in their policy meeting later this month, where markets are expecting the central bank to hold interest rates steady. I'm Matt Mattinson.
More Catholic Connection coming your way on a Thursday morning. It's June 4th. Thanks for listening. Having a great Thursday morning. It's June 4th, 2026. Always great to connect with Father Peter John Cameron, Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph, talking about the 4th annual Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage by the Dominican Friars. Father, great to catch up with you again. How are you?
I'm well. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
All right. So this is a beautiful, beautiful event. First of all, give us a background. This is a fourth year, right?
It is the fourth year, yes. It's the initiative of a young friar who was on fire for the Dominican tradition for promoting the rosary, and he had the inspired idea of staging a national pilgrimage at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, the Basilica. And the first year just went like gangbusters, and so it became an annual event, and it's something that people really look forward to every year, and they come from all over the country to learn about the rosary, to pray the rosary, and to be together in faith.
So do people need to register ahead of time? It's coming up in September, September 26th more specifically.
Yes, and there's a website dedicated to the Rosary Pilgrimage, so it's very easy to do.
So do they need to register? Should they register in advance? Or
I think, yes, it's a good idea because they want to know the numbers and they want to be able to plan well for just all the logistical things that are involved.
So, Father, why is this very helpful for us in our journey as Catholic Christians to do something like this, do you think?
Well, because the Rosary, it's not a sacrament, but it's very close to sacraments in the sense that it's a gift given to us by the Lord, by the Blessed Mother, for the purposes of sanctifying God's people and of strengthening the Church and of renewing the Church by constantly drawing people back to the central mysteries of the faith, praying them so that the power and the majesty of those mysteries can really take hold in the particular life of the believer who's praying. And it's different from just studying theology or just doing spiritual reading, because it's praying, but it's praying united with the Blessed Virgin Mary, who knows Jesus and loves Jesus and who is united to Jesus in a way that is impossible for us without her help. So it's a powerful, mystical experience of drawing closer to God and one another, which is his gift to us in mercy and love.
Father, do you think, given all the people that are coming, that have come back into the Church, we saw so many numbers, not only in the United States, but all over the world. I was just reading an article in relationship to the Holy Father's visit to Spain, which begins this weekend, but how many young people also coming into the Catholic Church in Spain as well. Do you think that this is Mama Mary helping us with this, with all the people saying these rosaries around the world?
I don't know how it couldn't be the work of the Blessed Virgin Mary, because she's our mother and she knows the needs and the longings and the sorrows and the struggles of her children, and especially the littlest ones, the youngest ones, who might turn to the world but will never find what really satisfies. And I think the Blessed Virgin Mary's heart is such that when these young people connect with it, when they discover her, she's irresistible. It's just there's something that comes alive in them because of the love of Mary in their life that finally makes their life make sense. So I'm sure Our Lady is involved in.
So obviously there's been amazing positive fallout from this. This is a fourth annual. You won't be doing it again. I mean, you still may do it even if a lot of people didn't show up, but you have a lot of people attending. What has been the response from those who have attended in the past, Father?
Well, sadly, I've never been able to attend because I'm a resident in Rome teaching at the Pontifical North American College, and that's when our school year begins. So I've got special permission this year to come home to be able to speak at the event. But from what I hear and from what I read, it's just people leave so enthusiastic, so really on fire with a sense of God's closeness, God's tenderness, God's eagerness to enter into people's lives, especially where they're really challenged and where they feel most alone or they feel most unheard. There's something truly mystical about the Rosary, and there's also something very contemplative about the Rosary. And to share contemplation with a couple of thousand people is an experience that you usually don't get the opportunity to enjoy, unless you live in a really big monastery. So I think I think it's that. It's an expression and an experience of faith that really it's almost impossible to be had in any other way. Or I mean, there are other ways, but it's a unique experience that really satisfies a longing and a hunger in people.
And the website's beautiful. And the link for the website, folks, if you want more information and to register so they can get a handle of how many people will be in attendance, rosarypilgrimage.org. rosarypilgrimage.org. And there's also information, which is very helpful, about travel and lodging for the 26th pilgrimage, and all kinds of great stories and items to kind of give you a flavor of what's going to happen on September 26th. Father, in terms of our rosary, obviously your connection as a Dominican, can you give us a little background? Maybe there's a new Catholic listening. Maybe someone says the rosary but not sure exactly how it came to be. Can you give us a little background before we let you go?
Sure. The rosary, as St. Pope John Paul II said in his beautiful document on the rosary, is a pathway into the heart of Jesus Christ. And when so the rosary is given to us from the earliest centuries of the church. It was called different names. It was called the Marian Psalter. It was prayed in many different ways. But the unique combination of praying 10 Hail Marys, the full Hail Marys, with the starting with the Our Father, with mysteries and meditations to accompany all of that, as a way of, as I say, entering into a contemplative spirit so as to come into personal contact with the saving events of Jesus. It's something that the human heart really needs. If there wasn't a rosary, we would probably have to invent it, because our heart is so needy for this very beautiful, tactile, mystical, contemplative, and simple form of prayer. And many other religions have something analogous to it, praying on beads, etc. But this is much more than that, because, as I say, it's the gospel in a miniature form, and by praying it, we gain all of the saving power of reading scripture, but we don't need to have a book. In fact, in days gone by, when people could read, they would pray the rosary instead of praying the Psalms.
Yeah. Talking with Father Peter John Cameron, Dominican Friars of the Province of St. Joseph, about the fourth annual, Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage coming up in September, September 26th, to be exact. And go to their beautiful Rosary Pilgrimage website, which is rosarypilgrimage.org, for all the information. Again, September 26th, this is the fourth annual, so you know it's popular. And Father, I can't think of a better location than the beautiful, beautiful, oh my gosh, the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C.
Yes, that truly is a gift in and of itself, just to be in that place, that beautiful place, sacred place, and to be there all together in prayer.
Do you find, or have you heard from your fellow Dominican friars? I know you said this will be the first time that you'll be able to attend. Because when you're in that amazing, amazing place, there's so many side chapels, there's a museum, there's so much to see, so many places to pray. I mean, that would be an opportunity, really, for people to go off on their own and maybe have their own prayer time, correct?
Right, very much. So I think there's something like 88 side chapels dedicated to different titles of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and some of them are just breathtaking, and some of them are relatively new. So, yes, it's an occasion for being together, but also having some quality time alone with Our Lady.
Amen. Father, thank you so much. God bless you, and all the best. I hope this continues for many years to come. RosaryPilgrimage.org. We'll be right back. June 4th, it's a Thursday. Great to have Carrie Gress, editor of Theology of Home, beautiful online magazine and ministry. She is a scholar at the Institute for Human Ecology at Catholic University of America, author, speaker, and just an amazing on-fire fellow sister in the Lord. And she's got some great ideas, speaking of home, for America's 250th birthday, summer ideas for the family. Hey, how are you, my dear? What's going on?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. Good, and you're on campus to tape with the lovely Jeanette Williams, which will air on, I want to get the dates right, Monday through Friday. Look at you. Wow, you're doing 4 days with Jeanette. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, 5 days.
Oh, 5 days. Yeah, 22nd to the 26th, okay, if you include Monday. You're right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so give us some ideas. Let's start off with, because there's so much out there. We're hearing so much about the anniversary.
Sure.
And I'm sure there's lots of secular things we can do, but how do we help our families connect the beautiful history of our country to Catholicism?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked. This is one of the things I've been working on at Theology of Home, is a kind of guide for the America 250. We have done guides in the past. We did an Advent guide, a Thanksgiving guide, a Christmas guide, winter guide, even an Easter guide. And so it just seemed like this was just ripe for it. And, you know, I think you can go to the sort of superficial level of apple pie and baseball and that kind of thing. But we wanted to go a little bit deeper with it. So I think mm-hmm. the amazing thing about it is, obviously, when you have 250 years, you have so much history to go into, and even just the real palpable faith of the founding fathers, of the Revolutionary War, aspects of the Civil War, and then, of course, just the American vision that's connected to the church. You know, most people don't realize that the Mississippi River was initially called the Immaculate Conception River, and all of those kind of amazing details, and, of course, the Basilica, the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception that you were just talking about. So I think that there's, you know, there's so much that we can look to that goes beyond the superficial, just, you know, merely flag waving and fireworks. I think we can go a lot deeper in honoring the history of the United States and, you know, really teach our children about that. And that's what we're trying to do with the guide, is highlight some of these, mm-hmm. you know, this remarkable intersection between American history and the church and, you know, what it is that God has done in this country.
Well, I'm looking at the cover of the guide, which mm-hmm. is beautiful. It's entitled Indivisible. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So this is just a, you know, it's like a regular magazine. It'll be online on the 14th of June and available. And it's one of those fun platforms that it makes you really feel like you're flipping pages. You can actually hear the page flip mm-hmm. with it. But yeah, it's got prayers. It's got, you know, everything from how to take care of a flag. We've got recipes. We've got a lot of history. We did some deep dives into even something as ordinary as the teddy bear. I have become a huge fan of Theodore Roosevelt, and he is the one who that's where the idea came from, was the teddy bear. And he had gone hunting, and everybody else got a bear. He was in Mississippi. Everybody else shot their bear, and one of his aides tied a bear up to a tree and told him to shoot it. And he said, absolutely not. I'm, you know, so unsportsmanlike. I'm not going to shoot it. And this mm-hmm. made it into the press. And that's really where someone came up with the idea of making it the teddy bear. And then, of course, you know, nearly a century later, you've got Ralph Lauren, who's immortalized the teddy bear in our clothing mm-hmm. and all of that. So it was really fun to pull that history together and to connect it with something contemporary that's, you know, really feels on trend, like Ralph Lauren at the moment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really just a whole array of things for entertaining and inspiration. There's even a playlist of American music that we've put together that can be great for an outdoor barbecue or just your own, you know, prepping. And, you know, the best thing about those playlists is once you have them for kind of an event like that, then it's just this really great memory bank. I know I've done that with my own children. When we travel, we put together a playlist, and then it just ends up becoming kind of this you know, deep memory of our time together and that they're going to go back to in the future and recall those really, you know, beautiful and happy days as a family together.
And you have a beautiful prayer from Mother Angelica mm-hmm. as well.
We do. We know Mother Angelica is obviously interceding for our country and mm-hmm. and certainly for our mission at Theology of Home. So it's always great to include her.
Well, I think, can I read that for our listeners? Because it's really
beautiful.
Please do.
Yeah.
Lord God, I ask in all humility that you bless this country as unworthy as we are. Protect it from every evil. Protect it from the enemy. Protect it, Lord, that it may accomplish thy will and keep thy commandments. I ask, Lord, with a pleading heart to look down upon us in our unworthiness. Give this country a renewal of devotion to you, your law, and commandments. Let us be once more a country under you, Lord. Amen. Mother Angelica.
Amen.
That's beautiful. Where'd you find that?
You know, I don't know where Emily found it. Emily Malloy has been, she's really the design, you know, genius behind all of this. I don't even know how she does this. She makes, you know, I just give her some ideas and we pull some things together, and then she just works this magic and makes these incredibly beautiful guides. And she's the one that came up with that prayer. So yeah, it'd be really fun to proliferate that and make it available for people. You know, that's something for us to think about doing on our blog.
You know, I love the recipe factor because I think cooking with your children, with your family, my husband and I love to cook and we do it together all the time. I think that's extremely bonding for people.
It is. And it's that same thing like music. It's tactile and it builds in memories and you've got it in your taste buds, really. You remember the flavor of your berry cobbler or of, you know, corn on the cob and, you know, all of those staples that we tend to serve on the 4th of July.
Do you have a favorite recipe that you like to make with your family?
Let's see. You know, we love to barbecue steak. That's sort of our big thing, is certainly grilling. And, you know, I think our go-to, I hate to say it, it's so cliche, but it really is a favorite, chocolate chip cookies. We have this great recipe that has uses malted milk in it from the Pioneer Woman that I've been making for years, and I could probably make it in my sleep. It's just outrageously good. That and apple cake is another family favorite too.
And my aunt used to make apple cake.
Yeah, that's German
very,
apple
very good.
Cake.
It's very moist.
It's
you're
really
making me
moist.
Hungry. That's my fault.
Good.
I asked the question.
No, I think that's good.
No, it's really fun, though. What I love about this is some of the old photos. Like, I'm looking at page 6. Now, I'm older than you, I'm sure. But, I mean, that old ad with Pendleton. I remember Pendleton, that designer.
Yeah.
Very American.
So there's a great story behind Pendleton. I grew up in Oregon, and Pendleton is housed there. It actually originally started over a century ago in Pennsylvania. And then the founder moved out to Oregon. And they made these, you know, wool shirts that were called board shirts. And the Beach Brothers actually wore them. And the Beach Brothers were actually originally called the Pendletons because of those shirts. And then someone wisely made them change their name to the Beach Boys, which obviously is a much more all-American California ring to it. And I'm certain is part of their success. But very few people know that. And you can still get those gorgeous blankets. They have a whole line of blankets and socks and pillows and everything that's they're all related to the national parks. So it's a really fun way to integrate the national parks into your decor and to, you know, feel like it's got this connected sense of history. And of course, the national parks came from Theodore Roosevelt. I think there's a real theme here. A lot of things go back to Teddy Roosevelt in this this guide.
Well, we'll talk more about it. It's absolutely beautiful, and find out how people can get their hands on it. They can read it online and flip through it. It flips like a real magazine, as Carrie said. Carrie Gress is with us. We're talking about a guide for Theology of the Home in anticipation of our 250th anniversary. She's on campus to tape with Johnette for a number of shows, actually for 5 days. We'll be right back. Is with us. Of course, she's with Theology of the Home of Home, and she is in studio. She's taping this week with the sweet and beautiful and lovely and amazing Johnette Williams for a number of different programs that will air later this month, closer actually to the 4th of July, again, as we celebrate our 250th anniversary, providing us with a beautiful guide, an online guide that is stunning in terms of the photos and the information, the recipes and activities for the home. And Carrie, I want to mention, we were talking about this during the break, with all the people out there who have just horribly desecrated the flag of the United States of America, thank you for putting in flag etiquette in this.
Yeah, again, that was Emily's idea, but we have a flag at my home, and we are really conscientious about taking care of it. And I think that most people aren't really even aware that there is etiquette behind it. So yeah, that seemed like a really important thing for us to just start being mindful of again. And another great way to, you know, something we pass along to our children is that kind of respect for the flag.
And that's something they can remember as they get older, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, remember saying the pledge every morning at school and, it was just part of your morning routine of getting ready for school. So I know so many of us know it, but it doesn't seem like something that's being passed on readily at this stage.
So I just want to go over, I'll read some of these and you can comment, but this is wonderful that you have these different points in here regarding displaying the flag correctly. So the flag should be raised briskly and lowered ceremoniously, never touching the ground at any time. I love this because it shows such respect.
Yeah. No, without a doubt, that seems to be the key piece. You know, this isn't just some other decoration in our yard, that there it really has a deep significance that I think needs to resonate with us and needs to be treated with respect because of that.
Display the flag from sunrise to sunset. If it is flown overnight, always provide suitable illumination such as outdoor lighting or solar spotlights.
Isn't that great?
I
mean,
yes.
Think about having a specific light on the flag in your yard, and just, you know, I think so that people can see it at night all the time too. I think that's really just a beautiful, not, you know, a suggestion in terms of devotion, but also in terms of the aesthetic of it, which sounds really superficial, but I think is actually really important if, you know, when people are coming to your house or driving by your house after it's dark.
On buildings, a flag should hang with the Union, Blue Field, and Stars at the peak when on a pole, or uppermost to the observer's left when displayed flat. This is, I think, very helpful, because many people want to display the flag, especially when we get closer to 4th of July, but knowing this and how it's done, I think, is a great witness.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right.
Let's do these last two, because I think it's really important to throw this out there. Maybe people don't know. Maybe they haven't heard this before. In a group of flags, the U.S. flag should be in the position of honor, highest, or at the center and front, and never display the flag in a way that could allow it to touch anything below, especially the ground, water, or any objects. And I love the image of this giant flag on a barn in the countryside.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it? Yeah. And I think... the other thing that's really important is just disposal of a flag when it's
right.
When it's worn out. My town has its own place in City Hall where you can go and leave flags that have been used and loved, and they will take care of them in a dignified manner. So, I'm sure there are probably more than my town, you know, places that do that.
One of the things my father would always do, my father loved music. He actually was a vocalist. He had a beautiful Italian tenor voice. He loved all music, especially the opera. But he loved a lot of the historic and the very, very patriotic music and John Philip Sousa. 4th of July, we would always wake up to John Philip Sousa.
That's beautiful.
And that music, the marches, the famous marches. And
wow.
That has stuck with me and just reminds me of our country. He was very proud, even though, of course, his heritage is Italian. But he was very, very proud of, he had served in the military, served in the Merchant Marines for many years. But he was very proud of America and
I love that.
Wanted to pass that on to us.
Yeah, we might have to include that. Add him to the playlist. He might already be there. Emily's been the mastermind behind that playlist, and she's covered a lot of ground. But I like that idea. We might have to tell that story.
So is this available now, this beautiful online guide?
It's not. It's going to be out on Flag Day on Sunday, June 14th, and it'll be available at theologyofhome.substack.com. We'll have it pinned to the top of the website so that people can get to it really easily.
Okay, so Fulton Sheen is also in this.
Right? You can't have a 250, America 250 guide and not have Fulton Sheen in it. So he will be in it. We're going to be including... some reflections about him. We also are including some different books that Matt Meehan's book just came out with Sophia Press, The American Fables. And I went to his book release a couple of weeks ago and was just utterly transformed by it. I can't wait to get my hands on the book. I've got a copy in the mail. So we're going to be adding that because I think he just does an incredible job of offering American fables in a way that appeals to all age groups and makes it accessible. So I'm looking forward to adding some of that into this. But we've got just a whole array of different things in this guide.
I think it's great. It's beautifully done. So congrats on this. Take us back to why you started this whole idea of helping people focus more on the home.
Yeah, it was funny. The idea of Theology of Home came to me on my treadmill one afternoon because I realized, my goal as a mother is that I want to get my husband, my children, and everybody that I love home to heaven. Like that's the goal. And that our physical homes are actually the means through which we do that. They're meant to be a foretaste of heaven. But there's also there's that desire, and it's not just among Catholics or Christians. It's this universal desire to make our homes some kind of a sanctuary. And that's, I think that's God's sleight of hand saying what you're really longing for is heaven. But I'm going to allow you to just have a little taste of it here. And that's why the home is so important. That's why we spend billions of dollars on home renovations and decor and, you know, throw pillows. And so I think there's something to this, this human, you know, the longing of the human heart. But of course, we have to have that properly ordered. And then, of course, you mix that with what's happened with the feminist movement that's really denigrated the home and made it something that, you know, is just unimportant or is just more of a, you know, a show place that, or even a hotel where people just sleep for the night and maybe have a meal or two, but aren't really becoming a family and getting to know one another and you know, allowing children to become who it is that they're meant to be. So all of that was really packed into the early vision. And of course, you know, four books later and our blog, we've, you know, we're still moving.
What's the main website in case people aren't familiar with it or haven't seen it yet?
The easiest place to go is just theologyofhome.com, and that will then take you. We have a mercantile, so we have a whole line of lifestyle products. And then we also have the blog that has it goes out every morning. I cultivate and curate 8 different articles of things that I think Catholic women are going to be interested in, and Catholic men too. We have a lot of men who read Theology of Home, but it's, you know, it's things like theology and philosophy, but it's art and travel and recipes and just amazing things that you know, I find fascinating around the internet that I think people would, you know, really enjoy and add to the richness of their lives. And so that's that goes out Monday through Friday, you know, 50 weeks out of the year. So we'd love to have people join us there and really be edified by that.
Do you think the attitude toward the home is changing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I sense that. I really do.
Yeah. No, I think you're dead on about that. I think there's a huge shift happening. Younger women in particular are really drawn to it. I think they've experienced that sort of vapid home and the idea of, you know, just the girl boss, and they're really rejecting it, and they want something deeper. They want real relationships. They want something rich. They want something tactile and tangible, and you know, that's the beauty of cooking for people and caring for people and gardening and, you know, all of those things that happen in the home. That's what I think they're longing for. And so it's you know, it's one of these things. We started this, goodness, like 2017 maybe, and then COVID hit when shortly after the first Theology of Home came out. And so it was just really timely. You know, you can see the Holy Spirit just planting seeds and helping people kind of get this straight, because there was such a long period when people just felt like, okay, the home is just superficial and vain and it's just about, you know, decorating. But I think there's just so much more to it. And so that's one of our goals, is to show the deep theology that's there, that's really meant for us to live and get our families, you know, ultimately to the home that we all long for.
Yeah, I find it fascinating. And there is a story that broke a couple of weeks ago, and I was interviewed in secular media on this because of my books on Italy. But there's a new trend. You've probably heard about it. It's called Nona Maxing. Have you heard about
it? Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and it's all about getting back to basics. It's mainly, I think, is it Gen Zers that are tying into this, but a lot of people are picking up on it, having to do with they want the comfort of home, and Nona, being the grandmother, and they want to be in the home with grandma making a real meal from scratch.
Yeah, right. It's amazing. But it's not. It shouldn't surprise us. I think we've had the opposite for so long, that people are really hungry for that experience of you know, the concept to the execution that we haven't had, because we've been given so many shortcuts. And it's just, you know, there's something part of that process of caring for others and really putting yourself into a loving meal. I think people can taste the difference, actually.
Yeah. And in terms of what else we can do, we have this beautiful guide from you and this website. What else do you suggest as we move into this very important anniversary of our country for families?
I mean, I think one thing, there's obvious things like, you know, bunting and fireworks. But I think one thing that my family is going to do I'm going to go with my kids and pick out maybe kind of a different, maybe fruit tree, maybe a fig tree, maybe an apple tree probably seems appropriate. I actually live in the town where George Washington was born. So the famous apple tree that he supposedly chopped down fell in that town. But something that, you know, you can plant a seed and then watch it grow. And it's tied to those memories. and they can experience it over the years, and you have this memory that goes back to something earlier. And, you know, it doesn't have to be something so dramatic, but I think you could also even just do a potted plant or something that can actually, children mm-hmm. can watch grow. Because even that experience of watching a seed grow into something bigger, I think is always mind-blowing for those of us who are, you know, in this very sterile technical world. Mm-hmm. So things like that. Arranging flowers, obviously, is always a perennial thing in a very easy way, especially places like Trader Joe's have great bouquets for very inexpensive, and you know, those can be broken up and go a long way in decorating the home.
What about reading patriotic stories, sharing that with children?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really incredible idea. And that's really what I was drawn to with Matt Meehan's book, is mm-hmm. that there are so many great stories in that. I think there's so many resources now. My kids were really into Liberty's Kids, which is all about the Revolutionary War. And, you know, it was mm-hmm. kind of amazing. At 6 years old, they knew a lot more about the Revolutionary War than I did. You know, and I kind of learned by osmosis. In fact, it was funny because I finally watched it because I had only heard it in our car. And I was like, oh, that's what those characters look like in this video. So I think that's the great thing, is there's so many different resources now for children to learn about the history of both the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and the Founding Fathers. The Ken Burns series is always a classic about the Civil War that I think people would really enjoy as well. So it's those kinds of things that families can do together to learn together that's going to bring it to life and add real richness in people's memories and experiences.
Well, you're a gem. Thank you for all that you do and speaking the truth in love and for what you offer, not only for families, but for women especially, to truly embrace their faith. Once again, Carrie, for the new guide, when will it hit the online sources?
It drops in June 14th.
Great. Thanks, my dear. God bless. And have fun
you.
With Jeanette. Give
Thanks.
Her a hug for me.
Will do.
Okay.
Take care.
We'll be right back on Catholic Connection on a Thursday morning to let you know what's coming up on Friday. Forget to check out this beautiful guide for Theology of Home, given to us by our wonderful guest, Carrie Gress. And again, she is going to be taping, I think, 5 shows with Jeanette Williams, and she's on campus to do that, and that will air the week of June 22nd through the 26th. So two dynamic sisters in the Lord. That's going to be great, great conversation, I'm sure, and great information. Coming up tomorrow, speaking of great information, I always enjoy learning what our network is going to be giving us in the next week or so. So many great programs, different outlets, all kinds of great ways to learn. Peter Gagnon, our president of EWTN Studios, will be joining us at 15 minutes past the hour in the first hour of Catholic Connection on a Friday, June 5th, if you can believe it. And then we're also going to be taking a look at angels again. We're going to re-air a wonderful interview that we did with Father Mike Driscoll, all regarding angels. It is a very, very cool book, and he really dives into what angels are, what they are not, what does the church teaching say, and helps us with that. And then we are also going to be, what else? Oh, we have, I think Father Chris Alar is going to be joining us as well. So there's always great stuff going on. So we keep you updated, and we look at everything through a truly Catholic perspective. Wishing you a beautiful Thursday, and of course, tomorrow is Friday, June 5th, and it's a big week for the Holy Father, a big weekend, I should say. Make sure you keep in touch with all of the programming, because we will be following the Holy Father through his amazing 6-day trip to Spain. It starts on June 6th, and it runs through the 12th, but we'll cover it because we're everywhere. Talk to you tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.